From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Namdi. Tom Sherwood, he's our resident analyst. He's a reporter with NBC4 and a columnist with the current newspapers. Tom, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And joining us today in studio is Jack Evans. He is a D.C. council member representing Ward 2, but as of the last 24 hours, he is the new chairman of the board of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, WMATA. Jack Evans, congratulations, I guess, are in order.
Yes, thank you, Kojo.
You're Mr. Chairman, we have
Mr.
to call
Chairman,
him.
Yes.
And I have to call him Mr. Chairman for
Mr.
the rest
Chairman,
of
the Honorable.
For the rest of the broadcast. If you have questions or comments for Mr. Chairman, give us a call at 800-433-8850 or send email to kojo@wamu.org. You can go to our website, kojoshow.org, and watch the live video stream of the broadcast and submit your questions or comments there, or shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show. The latest news, Tom Sherwood, a D.C. judge, has ruled that the effort for a public vote to raise the minimum wage to $15 will not be placed on the most November ballot. He said because the D.C. Board of Elections improperly approved language for the ballot initiative. What he means by improperly, because at the time the language was approved, the three-person board was not properly constituted since two of its members were serving under expired terms. It would appear, however, that that argument, if held up, can apply to a number of previous decisions that the board had made that have been standing for a long time.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where the Judge Maurice Ross pointed back in 2011 to the Superior Court. What his reasoning was, the Board of Elections said, you know, the Home Rule Charter allows for board members to remain in place until they're replaced by new appointments. And so the Board of Elections is somewhat mystified by this ruling. It was brought by Harry Wingo, who was at the time was the head of the D.C. Chamber of Commerce, and he filed a variety of reasons of why it wasn't going to be done, shouldn't be done, to have a $15 minimum wage put to a ballot. But this is, I'm told, was one of the oddest reasons on there, was that the board wasn't properly constituted. I mean, if we went through every board or commission and said who has expired terms and still serving, the whole city government would shut down.
Jack Evans.
Yeah, it's a puzzling reason for the ruling, because, again, it's the first I've seen of it today, and the question is, were these people in a holdover status? And the law certainly in some boards and commissions allows for a holdover status. And I don't know whether they outstayed their holdover status. So it's questionable as to why this was done the way it was.
I think what happens next is the judge is expected to write the order on Monday, and then this Board of Elections will appeal and ask for a stay of this ruling while they appeal.
Well, we'll see what happens after that. Jack Evans is the longtime chairman of the Finance Committee on the D.C. Council. You should know that there was some money that the city was going to be getting that it's not going to be getting anymore, because Mayor Muriel Bowser has decided to forgive thousands of parking tickets issued Friday during the snowstorm when people were parked in emergency roadways that people are not allowed to park in during snowstorms. The mayor seems to be in a very forgiving mood here, but what message does it send?
Well, I think it's a good point that you're raising, because on the one hand, people were parked illegally in snow emergency routes. And if you've been around here enough, you know that they have these routes. You're not supposed to park there. The reason is, even before it's snowing, we want to be able to salt the roads and prepare them for the snowstorm that's coming. And so I'm a little concerned that we're dismissing these, because what does it send? The message for the next snowstorm that we are about to have, and can people rely on the fact that the tickets will be dismissed? On the other hand, they are $250 tickets. My neighbor got one. What his argument was, look, there was no snow. I went out to the dry cleaners, parked my car, ran in and came out, and I had a ticket on my car, and it's a lot of money. So I think, you know, the mayor's trying to balance it between the pain of the 250 versus the effect of keeping people from parking where they're not supposed to park.
Well, she says a lot of people apparently didn't know, despite the fact that the districts had put out the information the day before.
The information went out the day before on Thursday. The mayor made the announcement. It was all over social media.
It was everywhere.
Don't park. And now, I was just talking just before the show with Chairman Jack Evans. He's chairman of the Judiciary, the Finance and Revenue Committee, chairman of Metro.
Chairman Mao, right?
Chairman Mao. I do think there ought to be more snow emergency signs, the big red and white signs, because if I drive around town and I look for them, and if you're and I see them, but if you are a casual driver, you may not see one. But that's a lot of money to forgive. Also, the mayor did one other thing that was to forgive. The city did not, and has not, and will not do the $25 fines for individual residents, homeowners who don't.
Yes, yes.
But she did say they would start fining people, the commercial companies, $150, DPW will, if they don't clear their sidewalks. I just got a call moments before the show from someone in Georgetown, Mr. Evans, your district, saying that a lot of businesses in Georgetown have not cleared the sidewalks in front of their businesses, and this ANC commissioner, Bill Starles, wants them to start fining.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will or not.
Yeah, and I think they should. I'm a jogger, as you know, and I'm even annoyed at the residents. When I jog down P Street, there are about four or five residents who have not shoveled their walks. And so then you have to go out, climb over the bank, get into the street, or slip and fall. Look, if it's an older person, if it's some reason that you didn't do it, that's one thing. But if you really just didn't do it because you didn't do it, I think people ought to be ticketed.
But the city wrote about, $1.3 million in tickets.
Yeah, sure.
And it's, in a $15 billion budget, this is, and a lot of critics say, the city's just trying to make more money. But it really isn't. It's for first responders to get through.
Sure.
And it's for the snowplows to get through.
Absolutely, yeah.
You should know that while the parking tickets will not have to be paid, they are not dismissing the towing fees. But before we move
on, $100.
Before we move on, Melvin in Washington wants to talk about this. So put on your headphones, gentlemen, so you can hear Melvin. Melvin, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. First of all, I like to say, and this is the foolishness that exists, the snow emergency routes have not kept up with the changing demographic, changing of the city. Now, people live now where these snow emergency routes have been created. I was one that got my car towed. It was absolutely no place to park. I just recently bought a condominium over the last year.
And so you're saying that the development that has taken place in the city has put larger numbers of people living directly in the path, so to speak, of snow emergency routes?
And the snow emergency routes have not changed in order to compensate for that. Absolutely.
What street do you live on that's a snow emergency route? Don't give me your address, just the street.
Well, off Rhode Island Avenue.
You live off Rhode Island Avenue?
Well, I live on Rhode Island Avenue.
Rhode Island Avenue. Yeah.
Well, that's a major thoroughfare.
That's a major thoroughfare.
Then you can't park there during rush hour, and it's a major thoroughfare. I mean, if one car blocks a 2-ton snowplow and blocks an ambulance.
But that's my point. My car was actually parked on 4th Street.
Oh, well, that's different then.
Yes. Yeah. And my problem was it's literally no place to park. And then these heavy-handed, trying to get things done after she initially made a mistake, did not get people out. What I'm saying is that you need to invest in a snow removal process. Put this money to good use.
Well, that's an interesting discussion because as chairman of the Finance Committee, Jack Evans, we hear over and over again about other jurisdictions that invest more. But if these events only happen as they do once every maybe 10 years or 5 years in the district, how do you make those kinds of decisions and have that equipment sitting there for years at a time?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I will say this. You all have been around here as long, if not longer, than I have. I think our response to this snowstorm is the best I have seen. Take for granted.
Given the 2 feet of snow in one.
2 feet of snow in one storm. And there are neighborhoods that didn't get plowed out. There are streets that still didn't get plowed. I got all that. But I was here in 79, 96, 2010. And this is the best response I have seen. And Kojo, your point is this. We are not New York City, where it snows a lot. We are not Minneapolis. We're not even Philadelphia. And
not
so
Minnesota.
And certainly not Minneapolis. Yes. And certainly we have the equipment we need for the District of Columbia. And we then hire out a lot of people to come in and help us out when it happens. But we've all been here in winters where we didn't have snow at all. And to invest millions of dollars in that type of equipment probably isn't the best use of our money.
You know, this little history, going back to Tony Williams after the bad snows, he is the first mayor who invested in more equipment.
He did.
And every mayor since then has done more equipment. The mayor said more equipment. We brought some snow melter in from Indiana.
Yeah, the snow melter, right.
So, but it is important, though, that the city has, the region has to respond. The whole region didn't respond a week ago. But the city does have to respond in a way I don't understand in the plowing of why major roadways, and I drove up and down Mass Avenue several times in the last week, how it is that you can plow 1.5 lanes. I don't know if they're afraid of hitting the curb or there's.
That's what happened on Military Road, yeah.
But
yeah.
Not just, but in the suburbs, throughout the city, there's this plowing which doesn't quite get to the curb. The whole point of having the parking restriction is to clear the curb lane.
Right.
And then the snow plows do 1.5 lanes, and then 2 and 3 lanes of traffic suddenly are on 1.5 lanes.
Right.
I don't understand.
Cause major backups.
Execution. It looks like there's enough equipment out there, but I don't see why they
do. You're asking Jack Evans to answer that question?
Yes, he's the chairman of the world now.
I could give my one response, too, goes, Tom, to the point that we don't have any place to put the snow. So they do plow it. And then you have to find a place to put it, and it's in the dump trucks. But your point is well taken.
I will say this, on Mass
street?
Avenue, right where the vice president lives,
yeah.
If you plowed the lane and you just threw all the snow up onto the, and I realize the sidewalk's important,
the sidewalk,
too.
Yeah.
But it would be off the street.
Sure.
And
sure.
Then you can pick it up.
Okay, we do have to move on, because Jack Evans, as we mentioned earlier
started.
In the broadcast, in case you had forgotten, was unanimously elected to become Metro's board chair yesterday.
That's only like 6 votes.
Yeah, nor no other candidates. But I'll go with it.
Well, you are now the chair of the Metro Board. What do you see as WMATA's chief priorities at this point?
Okay. First of all, I am humbled to be chairman, and my goal is to work very closely with my other board members and in support of our new general manager, Paul Wiedenfeld, who is very, very good. And what Metro needs to do, I was on the board from 1991 to 2000.
And you chaired the board once before.
Yeah,
also.
Twice, actually. Yeah. And during that time period, Metro was in its golden age. We were the shining example of regional cooperation. We were the thing that actually worked. And when I came back on the board in January of last year, 15 years later, we were anything but. And so we need to return on a general basis, Metro, to that position of being the shining example that works. So what does it break down to? It breaks down to safety. People are very concerned that the system, number one, isn't safe, and number two, their physical safety of just what happened yesterday with the crime on Metro. Mm-hmm. So the whole safety element of the system and your feeling safe has to be addressed. And more importantly, and as importantly, when I spoke in my neighborhood the other day, 13 of the 15 questions that I got were not about homeless, were not about crime, they were about Metro. And people are concerned, number one, when I get on this stop, I want to get off on this stop in a timely fashion. Reliability.
That's the chairman banging the table if you're hearing the vibrations.
Couldn't
the
bring his gavel into this room, so he's just abusing his fist.
Why do the escalators still not work?
How does the chairman help do that? You've got this rounding up squirrels on the board. how does the chairman have the authority to say, Paul Wiedenfeld wants to do this, we're going to do it? I mean, is it just sheer? What is it? Your knowledge of the system? Is it your what is it? How does the chairman?
Basically, we give the guidance to the general manager, which he doesn't really need because he knows what needs to be done there. And so we provide the oversight like the council does. We provide the oversight to make sure that the issues that are of concern to us are being addressed. So you have, on the one hand, the running of the system, and then on the other hand, the entire financial disaster that took place over there, where the audit was 9 months late, 4 months late again this year, a downgrade. Frankly, this reminds me of the district government around 1995. Of a
That's
government
a
that wasn't functioning in every aspect, on the reliability side, on the delivery of service side, on the financial side. And we fixed it.
Labor contracts, funding, privatization. I mean, it just seems like everywhere you look, there's some problem.
Yes, yes.
And you're running for re-election in Ward 2 as a council member. Aren't you worried that these problems at Metro are so intractable that somebody might rise up and run against you or something?
Well, not on the Metro issue, no. And I think the issues are not I think on Metro.
Two different worlds?
Yes, two different worlds, and we can fix them. Metro still is an outstanding organization. We're the second largest subway system in America. And we you know, we only have been in existence since 1976. So we can fix these issues, but we have to take it a step at a time. And then the third part is going to be funding. And I recognize, I remember in the district, going to Congress saying we need more money. They said you can't even run your city. We're not giving you any more money. So we have to really show Congress, show the jurisdictions we can run this system, and then get this funding that is necessary to make this the world-class system.
You've already committed. You've already committed that you will not support any raising of fares.
No, no fare increases. I will not support any fare increases while I'm on the board.
The Washington Post reported at length today about some of the internal fractiousness that was going on
right.
the Metro Board. However, you were, as we said earlier, unanimously elected at this point. What do you see as the major differences that were dividing the board during that period leading up to your election as the chairman?
I would only take issue with the Post article in the sense that...
That you didn't like the picture.
Well, I didn't like the picture yet. Putting that aside, they could have found a worse one, but I'm not sure where. City Paper usually has a worse one, so they could have found one there. There was a debate on the board about the direction, and mm-hmm. I think the reporting tried to make it a much more personal story than it was. But the debate was really about having a turnaround person, about how we were going to go forward with Metro. And I think it was a very healthy debate we had. And I think at the end of the debate, we ended up with a great general manager and some really new awareness of what needs to be done.
General manager wasn't the first choice, but you do, and others seem to feel he is a good choice. My question about what goes on within the board is, could be a part of that be the composition of the board itself? Metro Board has, what, 16 members? Each jurisdiction has its own method for picking its four board
right.
members, creating what's been called a hodgepodge of federal representatives, government officials, and private citizens. Do you see any possible alternatives? Is the structure of the board itself problematic?
Yeah, well, yes. Right out of the box, the structure of the board is problematic. Do I see an ability to change that? Probably
yes.
not. Mm-hmm. Because everyone, when you open up a charter, it's like opening up rent control or something like that. There are always going to be people who are viewed as winners and losers, and that's why you can't really get it changed. So a 16-member board is almost unwieldy. You have a 16-member board with something like the Kennedy Center where they're all charged with raising money.
Right.
But trying to run an organization. Now, only 8 of the 16 get to vote. So one of the questions comes up, the alternates, should they be as important and as involved as they are? Well, in the district in Maryland, it may not matter as much, but in Virginia, where all Fairfax, Arlington, and Alexandria all contribute, well, they all want to be involved, even though 2 of those members, Arlington and Alexandria, don't vote. And so you have this really different group of people from different jurisdictions. My charge as chairman of the board is to bring everybody together and make this work. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Well, bringing everybody together, you can get them in the same room? Or do you
well, we're
just
always
mean,
in the same room, but just to get everybody on the same page, focused on what needs to be done here.
What is the first thing you said to Paul Wiedenfeld after you got this job?
Well, I said, Paul, we're going to get together next week and figure out how we can work together and make this work for both of us, since we're both new.
One of the big issues, and I never hear anyone say it, is the labor relations. There are, on one side, people are worried about privatization of Metro contracts
yep.
and the number of them, and that there's not enough. The Inspector General reports directly to the chairman. Is there enough checking on that? And also the labor work rules and all that. It seems to be the agency is fat, both in management and labor.
But the problem or the observation with labor is that over the years, the contracts that we have either lost by arbitration or entered into have produced a situation where our pensions, where all of our labor issues are the most expensive of any system in the country. And so we spend an enormous amount of money in the labor area. And I know the contracts are up and labor will be coming back looking for increases, pay increases, et cetera. If we don't raise fares, which we are not going to, the money has to come from somewhere if we are going to agree to these changes. And that goes back to the jurisdictions. Maryland, Virginia, the district willing to pay more money. And the federal government doesn't pay anything on the operating side.
It's one of your priorities. It's one of your priorities.
They're willing to pay.
It's one of your priorities.
Yes.
But how do you intend to accomplish that, getting the federal government to pay?
Well, I'm going to work with our local jurisdictions, Maryland, D.C., and certainly Eleanor Holmes Norton, to sit down and come up with a plan to address the federal contribution.
It seems like Larry Hogan, the governor, the Republican governor of Maryland, would be a good ally for
this. He'd be a great ally on this. And we transport about 70% of the federal workforce, Metro does, and yet they only pay capital dollars, not operating dollars. And they should want to pay operating dollars. We are America's subway system. We're America's team. We're not New York. We're not some other city. We're America. We're the nation's capital, and the federal government is here. They should want to contribute and make this system work, and I'm hoping we can make that case.
I know federal agencies spend a lot of money by buying bulk metro tickets
for
employees.
Yeah.
And if it ran better and costs weren't going up as much, everyone would benefit.
Absolutely.
Speaking of buying tickets, we got a tweet from Kenneth who says, hopefully Jack Evans can push WMATA for fair passes for all, not just students. Greater Washington has great ideas like a region-wide pass that exists apparently in Washington State.
And see, I agree with that. And one thing I would love to do is...
Wait a minute. News has been made. What? Jack Evans agrees with Greater Washington.
Oh, God.
And Dave Alpert.
David and I, we're longtime friends. We agree on almost everything, I think.
Yes.
We rode a bike together.
Right.
But yeah. What I was saying is the fair system. You have to be a mathematical wizard with a computer to figure out these fares on this system. It's crazy. And, you know, what they do in other places, like New York City, you have a flat fare. It's $2.75. You ride anywhere in the system. So is it possible to get Metro to the point where we have a fair system that makes more sense? It's like the politically correct fare system, like you pay by distance and time and all these other cockamamie things. Why not charge everybody $2 right anywhere in the system?
Well, he's a graduate of the Wharton School. He can't figure it out.
Yeah.
What that means for you and me.
It's horrible. I mean,
it
just
is.
Getting a smart card. But, you know, but if you ride in the district, a lot of short trips in the district, if I ride in the district from Southwest to Van Ness, and I want to pay the same thing as someone that rides in on the new Silver Line from Nebraska into town?
Well, I mean, that's the argument, Tom. But in New York City, you can ride anywhere in a situation that is much, much bigger than we are for the same price. Why not make it easy, simple? You would fill your subway cars if it costs $2.50 to ride anywhere in the system. I mean, I'm trying to come up with out-of-the-box solutions that are going to get this system back in where it needs to be. Now, that's a very costly endeavor, so you can't do it. So let's think somewhere else, maybe a maximum fare of $5. You know,
okay, 6 months from now, are you going to wish you didn't do this?
Oh, no. I'm excited. I really like Metro.
I mean, your energy on this is nothing like Jeb Bush in the presidential. I mean, you're really up for this.
No, I'm up for it.
You are known for being less than a regular Metro rider, but I saw a photo of you riding Metro recently. Does this mean you'll be taking Metro a lot more these days?
It does. I'm going to ride Metro. I rode it yesterday to the board meeting. I rode it back to the Wilson Building after the board meeting.
Can we ask him about the gondola?
We'll get to that. We have time.
Okay.
I still want to stay with Metro for a while.
I'd like to visit as many Metro stops as I can. It's like the full Grassley. There's 91. Full Grassley in Iowa. You visit all 99 counties. So maybe we'll visit all 91 stops.
Some of them will be the first time for you.
in Evans' case, is there some good news on the safety front for Metro? It's my understanding that you are on track to make the February deadline for a number of federal safety findings.
Yes.
Metro was required to make a plan after being put under Federal Transportation Administration oversight.
Yes, we are on target to address all of the concerns raised by the NTSB and others and are working, again, safety is our number one issue. We are working to address all of those concerns so that people have confidence that when they get on this system, it's going to be safe. And it's one of the things that Paul is working on, and I think we'll get there. I really do.
Well, that's safe is for the transportation working, but what about safety in terms of the police?
Yes, that's the other issue.
Chief Ronald Pavlik told me, I think he has like almost 500 officers for this 117-mile system and 91 stations.
Indeed, we got a tweet from someone who says, WMATA is second largest system in America. Why wasn't a security officer visible in the assault that took place yesterday?
He says he has a 10% vacancy rate. It seems to me it's a woefully understaffed and operated system just to have police officers visibly present.
Yeah. We're going to be on a call today, myself, the mayor, and a number of other people addressing exactly this issue because of the incident that happened yesterday at Gallery Place and the ones that have happened over the course of the year. And it may mean that we have to add additional police officers. I think that's what we're going to have to do in Metro. We're going to have a higher visibility on the trains. And lighting is a big issue for me too. You get in these stations and they really have become kind of dark. And just taking the new lighting systems that they have, bulbs that are much more of higher velocity, and making the stations more lit, more inviting than they are right now. Somehow the system has gotten a little stale, and that has to be changed.
Well, there are, fortunately, there are not many homicides on the metro system, but there are any number of robberies, direct robberies, and larcenies, and snatch and runs, and people don't feel comfortable on the trains. And I just don't understand why there isn't at least one police officer at the entrance of every metro station. Even if something happens, then you have a police officer who can be alert. It's just to me woefully inadequate.
Yeah, and I think that's something we have to address because it has really gotten out of hand. And even, you know, unfortunately, on the council, I had the mayor and I did an amendment the other day to increase the penalties, the terms for people who could commit violence on the subway. And Phil Mendelson and Kenyon McDuffie voted it down. And so it's like,
well, and they said in that case that, you know, frankly, there was a racial aspect to that, saying the white person got stabbed and killed on Metro, and that's when all the increase in penalties were proposed. But they say it's got to be a more consistent look than just raising the penalties.
And Mr. McDuffie made it clear when he was on this broadcast that he is concerned that too many young African Americans are being imprisoned for crimes that he think could be better dealt with by dealing with some kind of a psychological approach to them, that a lot of people need counseling and the like. And during that apparently contentious session in the council, you said that Mr. McDuffie really doesn't seem to like the police very much.
Yeah, well, he and Mendelson, it was a different issue that we were talking about, not Metro, whereby the police chief, the commanders, the officers had all contacted myself and a number of other people about a particular provision in his bill that the police officers felt put them at a tremendous disadvantage. I had an amendment supported by some of my colleagues to change that, and what happened, we don't want to get too much in the weeds here. Phil Mendelson came to the meeting.
Another chairman.
Unprecedented, and voted to on the side that defeated my amendment that the police chief and others all supported.
Well, to be clear, though, the chairman of the council, this now Mendelson, is a member of every committee and may come vote, so it's not unprecedented.
Well, it's unprecedented to vote in a situation where you had a full contingent of the Judiciary Committee, all five members.
Oh, okay.
Now, he has come in the past to make a quorum and to vote in order for the committee to function, but never can I remember him, Linda, Vince Gray, Dave Clark, anybody coming and defeating a 3-2 vote. I just don't remember that happening.
Oversight has been an issue for the Metro Board on safety, but also on financial matters, a little bit of which we discussed earlier. It's a big issue for you. Metro is still under a financial penalty imposed by the FTA, known as a restricted drawdown.
Yes.
After an audit revealed mishandling of large sums of money. Outside of getting the federal government to pay more, how do you intend to address that issue?
Well, we're looking at our auditors. We're looking at the financial systems we have, and we're doing a major overhaul of all of our financial areas in order, just like the district again back in 95, in order to produce financial statements that can be relied upon. And what happened in the situation you're talking about, Kojo, is Metro got sloppy, and we would have this automatic drawdown where you would draw down from the federal government, and then what happened when they did an audit, they discovered there were no timesheets that backed up all of the requests for the drawdowns. And so they refused to pay the money unless we did it on a manual basis. So Metro has just got to get its act together on the financial side. And we are well on our way, I believe, to doing that. We have a new CFO and we're putting in new systems and bringing on some new advisors. We have McKinsey and some others in-house, which gave us a great report yesterday on things that need to be done.
Was it you or Mr. Wiedenfeld who said this week that some top staff changes have to be made, not the rank-and-file workers, but people. I looked at the Metro organization chart. It's as wide as the United States.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
But that there's some major people. Maybe you need fresh blood in some of those jobs.
Well, I didn't say that this week, so Paul maybe have said that, but I don't disagree with that. I think we do.
Here now is Emily in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Emily, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo and gentlemen. Calling because to comment on a remark that Jack Evans made a few minutes ago about possibly charging a flat rate on Metro trains. And I think you probably, like me, all three of you were probably in D.C. when Metro first opened. And the fact that the technology existed at the time that made it possible to charge people by the mile rather than a flat fee was hailed as an advantage. And although the fares that we have to pay aren't necessarily always fair, F-A-I-R, I would think carefully before making that change back to
a flat fare?
What exists on older systems. Can you hear me?
Oh,
yes,
yeah,
we
yeah,
can.
Yeah.
Here's
yeah.
Jack
and,
Evans.
And I think it's a good point that you raise, but it's gotten so complicated and so expensive for people in the outer suburban areas. For instance, you come, you park in the parking lot, you pay, you know, $7, $8, $9, whatever amount of dollars it is to get into the city, all of a sudden your fee for that experience is more than if you drove downtown and parked in a parking garage.
Costs the same. It's about $25 a day if you're an early bird to park in the garage downtown. If you come from outer suburbs, it's like $8 in, $8 out, plus the parking.
Plus the parking fee. So have we defeated the whole purpose by doing this kind of...
I remember when Sam Macelle opened up the transit system in Atlanta. Sam Macelle was the mayor. For the first 7 years, the fee for everybody was 15 cents. Of course, that was ages ago.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The concept is make it fare friendly.
Yes, that's exactly right. Public transportation works when two things exist, when it's inexpensive and convenient, and Metro is neither. So we have to make it both. And you go to Paris.
Did you just make that up? That's a
no,
pretty good
but it's true.
That's a tweetable quote. Somebody here at the WAMU tweet that.
You
what, say it again?
I mean, you go to
public
Paris.
Public transit works.
It works when it's cheap and convenient. And Metro is neither. And in Paris, there's no stop that is more than 1,000 yards from any other stop. And it's the same fare no matter where you ride. So everybody uses it because it's convenient and it's inexpensive. And Metro has got to get to that point where we are both of those things.
Got to get to a couple of more issues before we go. Private pot clubs. On Wednesday, a council committee approved a bill that would permanently ban them. What are the issues? What's next there? You say the ban is unfair to those who don't own their own homes.
Well, another Mendelsohn connivance where he showed up again and voted when he didn't need to, and his vote defeated my move to table that bill until we could get amendments that allow private clubs to exist. Right now, there's a law in place, an emergency, and it's a good thing to be in place right now while we come up with a system that works, because there is a concern on behalf of the mayor and the police chief and others that you just can't have the Wild West out there. That's their terminology, and I agree with that. But also, the bill that McDuffie put forward bans all of it. And so we need a compromise between the two, and we should have waited. We hadn't, so we're going to, and it's on first reading on Tuesday, so people are scrambling right now to come up with some kind of an amendment or on the full council whether we can get enough votes to table it again.
Got a tweet saying, agree with Jack on one fare everywhere.
See, it's an interesting issue.
Walmart's announcement that it would not build the
outrageous
final two stores in D.C.
Outrageous.
It came as a surprise to many, not to Tom Sherwood. But what now, and how do you ensure economic development happens in all
well,
wards it, in the
as, D.C.? As a 30-second history on that, Vince Gray and myself and Vincent Orange and Yvette, we were all in Las Vegas when we made this agreement with Walmart. Granted, it was a handshake more than anything else, but that they could come into the city and build stores, but they had to build one in Skyland. And now, of course, they've come back and said they don't want to do it. I don't know exactly the mayor, economic development people, what they're looking at there. But from my point of view, it's tough to get a store at Skyland. And Walmart was a good store to have there. And is there still room to negotiate with Walmart? What if we built the store ourselves and paid for it and hired them to run it? I mean, think outside the box here. What does it take to get a store like that in that location, given all the promises we've made? And that's what I think we ought to be looking at.
Well, I won't do another rant on Walmart's
yes,
decision,
he's done that
but
2 weeks
I've never
row,
believed
right?
it. They never made any real effort, and there's always something, the Safeway, the retaining wall, the moon was blue. Who knows? Let's talk about something else that might be moonstruck, and that's a gondola.
The gondola.
There's now Arlington.
So for people who don't know, this is a proposal for a Georgetown to Roslyn gondola.
Right. I was going to say Arlington agreed this week to spend $35,000. I think the Georgetown bid is going to spend $75,000. I think the city might be kicking in $25,000. There's some other developers. It's a study about whether we can bring people over. I mean, Is this an air version of the streetcar? I just don't, what is happening here?
Well, that's a great way to characterize it, Tom, so I may use that. It doesn't strike me as something that I'm interested in pursuing, but, you know,
So here's the big news here. I did not know. Arlington says that the walkway over the bridge, not the cars, but it's 50,000 vehicles a day,
yeah.
But the walkway is the busiest sidewalk
in Arlington
from Arlington to Georgetown Bay.
Doesn't surprise me, though. So maybe a gondola would work. I mean, it's like when they built the Ferris wheel in London. Everybody thought that was the craziest thing and they should tear it down. Or the Eiffel Tower in Paris, if you really want to go back. So maybe putting a gondola in the long run.
That means people would have to walk from Roslyn, get on off the subway, get on the gondola, go to Georgetown, get on the bus. Gus.
It might be more of a tourist attraction. Who knows? But I guess if somebody wants to put up money and study it, they can take a look at it.
The reverse is not all about getting into D.C. One of the reasons Arlington is interested is because people in the district can come through Georgetown, can get on it, and then go over to the Marine Corps Memorial and to Arlington National Cemetery.
Right.
It could help the tourism traffic in Roslyn.
In both
ways. Running out of time very quickly.
I have plenty of time.
I'm so glad he's got another job now as chairman of Wumaka, because then he won't want to hang around here for the entire show. This is an email from Richard in D.C. How much of the loss in revenue is due to the drop-off on weekends? The Metro, he says, is so useless on weekends, I've quit using it.
I'm with that.
Really?
Yes.
That's hard to say. Now, remember, our bus has gone up, but the rail has gone down. And a lot of what the studies are because of alternative methods like Lyft, Uber, bike-to-rent, the cars, the small cars. All of that we're competing with. So I think that has certainly impacted on it. And I think, again, I can't deny that people have stopped using it because it's not reliable.
And convenient.
I think that has really impacted, and that's something we have to turn around.
Jack Evans is the new chairman of WMATA. He is also a D.C. council member representing Ward 2. Up next, Adam Eben. He's a Virginia state senator. He is waiting on the line right now, right? So, Jack Evans, we're going to have to say...
He's on the line, and I'm here.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to say...
I'm here. I'm here, though.
Goodbye to you.
Go catch that gondola.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck to you.
The producer, Inga's coming to get you and throw you out.
Our plans for a show with a live audience this week got derailed. One more victim of Snowzilla, but listeners should know that they can join us next Friday, February 5th, instead, at WAMU's Media Center as part of the audience for a broadcast of the Politics Hour. In-studio guests will include political activist Adam Eidinger and you. If this broadcast has become appointment radio for you, you'll have a chance to peek behind the scenes and ask your questions from the audience. Head to wamu.org/events for more details and reserve your free ticket today. There's that magic word, free ticket.
Did you mention Adam does the marijuana stuff in town?
Oh, yes. Adam is the leading advocate for marijuana in the District of Columbia, so all of you potheads can show up. Remember that it's free. Joining us now by phone is Adam Eben. He is a Virginia state senator representing the 30th district in Northern Virginia, including parts of Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax. Senator Eben, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can we get right to the gondola first? Did you hear the conversation about the gondola?
I did. I'm looking forward to riding it.
Are you pro-gondola?
Obviously.
No, I have not evaluated it, but I think as this region gets more and more congested, people are going to have to think out of the box. I don't know if that's the box to think out of, but I guess we need to take a look at all kinds of things. It's not on the top of my list, though, here in Richmond.
If you have questions or comments for Senator Eben, give us a call at 800-433-8850 or send an email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream and enjoy the conversation there. There's a lot going on in the General Assembly this session. Let's start with concealed carry. Virginia will once again recognize concealed carry permits from other states. There was a short-lived moment when the Attorney General declared that nearly two dozen states' permits did not pass muster in Virginia. What's your view about what's happening now?
Well, first of all, I got to thank the Attorney General for bringing the NRA to the table. That's the first time that's happened, and I don't know if it's in history, but certainly in recent history in Virginia. I think the two other pieces of the proposed deal are that we would have state police conducting voluntary background checks at gun shows.
Yep.
There are people who are not federal dealers at the gun shows selling guns, and they don't all want to be irresponsible. Some of them would like to take that 5-minute process to to test whether someone is legally authorized to have a gun. So that's one piece. The other part, though, is for people who have permanent restraining orders, subject to permanent restraining orders against them, could no longer carry a gun. And that's another step forward.
The flip side of that is that the governor's plan to ban gun permits from 25 states from being valid in the district, I mean in Virginia, would no longer take place. The ban won't go into effect. It doesn't seem like a huge victory. I think it's a victory if any legislature actually reach a compromise on anything, but it doesn't seem like a huge victory for the anti-gun side.
I wouldn't say it's a huge victory, but it moves the needle a little bit. And, you know, it's a very fragile proposed deal, so we'll see what happens. But I think it's an improvement in two ways that we've really tried to move the ball forward in the past.
Tell me what the politics of this were. Somebody, we were being asked before the show.
There's been no vote yet.
Well, I know, but just getting to this point, was this something that Governor McAuliffe came up with and the Attorney General Mark Herring is going along with, or is this good for that relationship, or how did it come about?
Yeah, I have not spoken to the Attorney General. I'm sure that he's happy with having the voluntary checks, the background checks, and the not having guns fall into the hands of people who shouldn't have them in terms of the restraining order folks. But he obviously wanted to enforce the existing law with the reciprocity, which had not been enforced in years. So I have not spoken to him to know if he's okay with that compromise.
I checked with the media. I see that the NRA has issued a statement saying that it supports this compromise. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence does not.
Mm-hmm.
The gun control debate seems to be front and center in Virginia, Senator Eben. What do you think it will mean for a battleground state in a presidential election year?
You know, I hadn't contemplated that. We still get people on both sides very passionate. I don't know that it'll change that in a big way. I think you'll still see people who are gun rights advocates turning out in high numbers, and people who care about gun safety don't always turn out the way we should. But I don't think it might be a wash in a presidential election. I'm not sure.
Well, the Iowa caucus, you know, is Monday night. What are you seeing in Virginia in terms of the Democratic side of the ticket, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and Governor O'Malley?
I've not seen a lot of organization on either side. I mean, there are grassroots, which is what's important, groups and so forth, and Facebook and meeting locally. The Clinton campaign's getting geared up, I know, in Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax, but I haven't really surveyed the whole state.
Are you have you got a choice?
Yeah, I'm supporting Secretary Clinton.
Governor McAuliffe's state Supreme Court appointee, Justice Rausch, was certified on Wednesday as being qualified to serve, but so was the other individual being suggested by the Republicans to be the next state Supreme Court appointee. So that may not necessarily mean that she stays. Tell us what's going on and what you think about it.
Well, if she was removed as sitting justice, it would be the first time that I know of. They're both she's well qualified, no question. She's got an excellent reputation, but the other judge who's the Republicans are pushing for this position,
Rossi Alston Jr.
Yeah, he may well be qualified as well. So the court's committee certified him as that. So I have no reason to dispute it. We have one Republican in the Senate who I believe is on record supporting Justice Rausch,
and a Democrat who is apparently considering supporting Justice Alston.
No, I spoke to him. He sits next to me.
Be Senator Kenneth Alexander of Norfolk.
That's right. Yeah, I spoke to him moments ago. He assured me that he's supporting Justice Rausch. And as I speak, the Republicans are meeting in a closed caucus, and I'm off the Senate floor, and we don't know exactly what it's about. But they've put off over and over a vote on filling the vacancy because they don't have the votes here in the Senate.
Talk about how race might have played a role in this, because Justice Alston is African-American, as is Kenneth Alexander. Do you think that was the basis on which the appeal was made to him?
I know that Judge Alston did meet with the Legislative Black Caucus the other day, but I also know that the Legislative Black Caucus is supporting Justice Roush unanimously. So I think that it's a consideration that perhaps the Republicans who wanted Judge Alston, I think he's being used as a pawn. I mean, I think that's they're hoping that that would have some appeal. I don't think it's worked.
Earlier this week, a Virginia Senate panel advanced a bill involving the court clerks who issue gay marriage licenses. What's going on there?
The bill was just actually sent back to committee. The sponsor of the bill said that he didn't mean to say what he told the Washington Post about how a clerk could not grant a license to someone because he didn't like interracial marriage, the clerk. And he said he apologized for that and sent it back to committee, perhaps so they could fix it and just include the other forms of bigotry that he intended.
What's the prospect for that? This is from the Kentucky, what's her name?
Kim Davis.
Kim Davis. This is a Virginia version of the Kentucky where she stood up and said she didn't want to put her name on a same-sex marriage license.
That's right. I think we've got the votes to kill it. We passed today two bills on a 25-15 vote for gay and lesbian equality. We passed one for non-discrimination in state employment and one for non-discrimination in housing for gay, lesbian, transgender people. And that was the Senate. We noticed some of the newer, younger Republicans voting with the Democrats. That's the Senate. That's a very different atmosphere than the House. So I think you may well see a stalemate in that, with the Senate being supportive of equality and the House not.
Another consumer issue. I'm trying to decide how pro-consumer Virginia is, and I'm not sure. Car title loans and payday loans. You had a bill that would have banned any such business from operating within 20 miles of a casino, not only because an Indian tribe in the state is thinking about a casino, but also because of MGM opening just across Alexandria from the Potomac River in Prince George's County. 20 miles, that would have pretty much kept car title loans, and payday loans out of Arlington and in Northern Virginia. It failed. Why did it fail?
Well, first off, the bill, 20 miles, where we have a real problem, as well as a problem in Arlington and the city of Alexandria, is on Route 1 in Fairfax, I represent part of. We have more than 40-something car title lenders there. And in, under the bill, it would have stopped new lenders, not forbidden the existing lenders.
Yeah, Michael Pope from WAMU here has done a lot of stories about this. But it, as I understand it, it would have grandfathered in those who exist.
Yeah.
And if a casino were to open in the future and you were within 20 miles, it wouldn't affect you either. It seemed to be a fairly easy bill to pass.
It should have been. And I've got to commend Michael Pope for the focus he's put on this and the light he's shined on this practice around that happens in Virginia. Everything that seems easy is not always as easy as it seems in Richmond. The car title lender advocates on the panel that dismissed my bill argued that because it's an allowable so-called business in Virginia already, that why would we want to make it harder for people to access this business? And I pointed out with the 47 or so car title lenders within 20 miles of the MGM casino that people would have to, that going 2 or 3 miles to a lender would not exactly be a hardship for people who want to have face these abusive predatory lenders.
What do you think about the overall impact of MGM? It's going to open later this year, certainly by the end of this calendar year in Prince George's County. Wilson Bridge is going to take on a different hue of people getting over there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't mind if they want to have gambling for their economic benefit. I guess that's not my decision. I'm not a big fan of casino gambling. If it draws visitors and draws hotels and draws entertainment as well, you know, that's better than just a seedy gambling hotel without much else. So in terms of being in Virginia, I'm not a favor of that, but, you know, it is what it is.
You wouldn't be in favor of a casino in Northern Virginia?
I can't imagine the circumstances, but I can't imagine the circumstances that I would, no.
Charter schools, is Virginia about to get a lot more of them, Senator, or is it still a ways off?
It's a ways off. There's a constitutional amendment that the Republicans do have the votes to pass, I believe, in the Senate and the House, and if it was adopted, it would go to the voters. They keep putting it off either because they're missing a vote in the Senate or more likely that they're trying not to have it on the ballot in a presidential year and rather draw voters in the gubernatorial year afterwards.
Well, you have Democrats and Republicans in the District of Columbia who are in favor of charter schools. What's the nature of the political divide in Virginia?
Well, a lot of people think that the current policy we have where local school boards can grant charters is acceptable. And we have in our Constitution, the power goes to the local school board to do that. We have a few charter schools in Virginia. The ones that I know of are performing well. And it's just we haven't had many. We've got magnet schools. We've got a lot of other options for people. But if people want to apply for a charter, they can. To my knowledge, there's been only one in Fairfax, perhaps, that was applied for and not granted. So it's not something that we're hearing a lot of in my area, a lot of grassroots demand for.
Just before you came on, we had Jack Evans, who's the new chairman of Metro. I think you've probably worked with Jack on some a variety of issues. But on Metro itself, Virginia has a fairly strong Republican Party, members of Congress and the state legislature. Do you see any hope that the state, the Virginia, can get together with the chairman, new chairman of Metro, and try to persuade Congress to do more operating money for Metro, since many of the federal employees live and work in Northern Virginia?
Oh, our state is very much for that. I passed an amendment to the Metro Compact a number of years ago that allowed for that compromise that Congressman Davis and other Northern Virginia representatives brokered to bring in the matching funds every year. And I think that our Northern Virginia federal representatives are working on that. And I know that our governor supports it. And money for transportation that doesn't come from Richmond is, I mean, there's no one who'd be against it down here.
On transportation, the governor's plan to have more toll roads and single occupancy toll roads and all that, that's not going very far, very fast.
Just have about 40 seconds left.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions being raised on it. But there are some good points on it about raising money to improve the corridor and allowing people who can't use the toll roads now to be able to use them in the future.
Adam Eben, he's a Virginia State Senator representing the 30th District in Northern Virginia, including parts of Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Question for you, Tom Sherwood. My alley in Ward 4, Brandon Todd, has not been cleaned, and I have been informed that the city does not plow alleys, but yet people on Capitol Hill tell me that the city has plowed their alleys.
I would suggest you get together with your neighbors and plow your own damn alley.
The city doesn't plow alleys?
Oh, they might get to it, but that's not. We want to move people around, not move people around in your alley.
Come on, city, plow my alley. Thank you all for listening. I am Kojo Nandi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.